Hi, everybody. This is Jean Norton. Thank you so much for joining me again on another Saturday. I'm really looking forward to today's call. I was able to snag Ivan Oberon from his busy, busy, busy schedule. Let's see, Ivan, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
So Ivan is, in case anybody didn't know, Ivan is the co-founder for a nationwide coast-to-coast real estate investing association, and he is also doing radio shows like every single day of, like 5 days a week with Bloomberg, and on top of that, he invests in real estate and somebody from my own heart, isn't afraid to rehab properties remotely, and I admire anybody that will take this on. So welcome, Ivan.
Yes, thank you, Jean. Thank you so much, and we certainly appreciate everything that you do. So that's why anything that we can do to help you in any way, we're glad to do it.
Well, we're all in this together, and you know, you're doing remote rehabbing, I'm doing remote rehabbing, and we're also helping people, and we see people that are stuck and just can't quite get it or get through some kind of a block or whatever. I mean, you're there, I'm there, we're all there to help, and I really like that.
Yeah.
And then Pete, he's out there every day trying to get everybody motivated and really very inspirational motivation he does on Facebook. And if you guys aren't on Facebook, you should be. Lots of good information. To be honest with you, it's kind of hard to keep some of the crap down, but, it's been opened up worldwide.
Absolutely. Well, and if they weren't on Facebook, they may not have heard about this call, right?
Right. Well, they may not have. That's true, unless they stumbled across my website or something. But Ivan and I both happened to, I don't know if like Mercury was in retrograde or what, but Ivan and I had a call scheduled to talk about some really, really cool things coming up. And, I had just gotten hit with, just a bunch of bad news. And, he called and I'm, just frustrated. I couldn't stay focused. I was, really upset. Somebody's threatening to sue me, and, I didn't even think I did anything wrong. I thought I was helping, and, this and that. And he was kind enough, and I was actually saying I just have to apologize for being so emotional. And he stopped. He said, "You mean being human?" And
that's right.
That really kind of helped, because in this real estate business, there's the highs are highs and the lows are low, and don't be surprised if sometimes, sometimes I say, I got to get out of this business, and of course I'm over that now.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jean, and that's the thing I think why we align with you so well, is because you do want to help people and you want to be real. And the reality is that what the gurus tell you and what so many people out there tell you about how easy it is and how you just get your entity and you'll be fine and stick to your numbers and everything else and you won't run into these challenges. But the reality is that we want to be transparent and we want to tell people, here are things that have happened to us. Here are pitfalls and here are mistakes that maybe we've made either wittingly or unwittingly, and how we're dealing with them and how we are becoming better because of it.
Sorry, you did somebody. Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. And I am really glad that you do, and I do too. I know if you guys saw my last blog post, it was titled something about, as a real estate investor, sometimes you just, have a big, bite in your butt or something like that. I can't remember what it was, the title exactly. But, every time I've done a deal, there's been something. It's always something. There are no two deals alike. And this one really got to me, and with all the other things that were going on, because, not only am I doing real estate investing, I'm also doing internet marketing and doing newsletters and trying to reach out and help people. And so I'm multitasking. I'm doing a lot of different things. So when my goals aren't as easy to get to as I want them to be, it gets a little frustrating. That's why I say that my fortitude is being tested this week. And
sure.
Especially with this this one property. It's a condo I've got in Virginia Beach. And, you know, moving along, the buyer wanted me to spend more money on it or they'd walk. And I, so I went ahead and got the new air conditioner, and then after, that commitment, the title company calls me and says, well, there's a problem with the title. And, and it was four transactions back in 2002. I mean, I bought it from Fannie Mae, and then there was, the third other transaction back. There was some issue because the deed was made out to a mother and a son, joint tenant in common,
mm-hmm.
and then the lady sold it by herself without the son.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh my God, I've got very expensive private money on this property, and it was supposed to be a cosmetic quick flip, et cetera, and then I've got this, and who knows what kind of a delay this is going to have. And so there was a good 24 hours where I was, thinking of all the different exit strategies or, all the different plan Bs because,
mm-hmm.
who knows how long something like this could take to get resolved. My title policy was only for what I paid for it, which is $45,000, and doesn't account for the other $25,000 I put into it. And,
sure.
and like I said, I've got expensive money on it, and how do I handle it? Well, sure enough, 24 hours later, they found the death certificate of the son that died. So that, it did clear up the title, and, we were able to proceed. But that was 24 hours of turmoil that not everybody can really handle. And I just share that with everybody just because when you get bad news, you want to look at, okay, how do I handle this bad news and how do I work around it? But it's really hard to not let it, stop you dead in your tracks. And,
sure.
Some people could, their stomach will get tied up in knots or they, will freak out or whatever. And I just want to tell anybody and everybody that is investing in real estate, that this stuff does happen. And, to not get too upset and to give it a chance to pass. And yes, I was thinking that was my last real estate deal. But just yesterday I was out looking at properties, making bids.
Well, and that really is the difference between people who succeed in this business and the people who fade away, because everybody's going to run into some kind of challenge. I had a similar title thing. I wasn't trying to sell the property yet, but I received a notice in the mail of some kind of hearing. And I called the title company. I was like, "What hearing is this about? Why am I not being showed as the owner right now?" And so they looked at it, and apparently they missed something. But the title company said, "Well, if it comes down to it, of course you're insured, so we'll insure the title. But that's what are you going to do? We don't know what's going to happen with that yet. And there's so many other challenges. And I know the." Be having knots in your stomach feeling for extended periods of time because I've dealt with issues that have drug on for more than months and not sure how they're going to be resolved and people being dishonest and sometimes you just don't know until you get into it and you don't know how people are going to behave until you get into it. You do all your due diligence, but sometimes people are just dishonest, especially when you're doing it remotely. And they can send you skewed numbers and skewed pictures and skewed comps and you don't always know because you have to trust. That's what I tell people. One of the things that you need here is faith. You have to put faith in other people, even if you do all your due diligence and all calculate all your numbers right. At the end of the day, you have to put your faith in other people because it's a people business and you can't do anything without other people. And the reality is that sometimes people let you down. And in real estate, when you're dealing with big numbers and big money, when those people let you down, it can be a really, really big letdown. So just know that those things are there. So you look out for them and pick yourself back up if and when something does happen to you. Otherwise, you know, like I said, that's what's going to separate you from the rest.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing I want to say too is these things do happen, and they can hurt, and they can, you know, emotionally, like I said, test your fortitude. And mm-hmm. and if you decide that this isn't the right time, or this event that happened to you was just too hard to face, and it's not something you want to deal with, it's perfectly okay to take a break from real estate investing. And that doesn't mean you failed or anything. It just means that it's going to take you a little bit longer time to process what had happened. And, you know, as long as you do process it and learn from it and can think back on where did things go wrong and, you know, what could I have done differently.
Somebody needs to mute out.
Okay, got him. I got him. I got this neat interface where I can mute them. I see who's talking and mute them out. I can just put it in Q&A mode, but we don't have a big turnout this time, so I try to, you know, if there's anybody that wants to ask questions. I got to tell you, though, Ivan, a horror story of the week. This man calls me out of the blue. I don't even know who he is or who he's related to, but he says, I hear that you are on like some kind of task force for people that rip people off. And I was like, well, not really, but you know, tell me what's going on anyway. And he starts to tell me about these people in Atlanta that he invested money in. And it wasn't just his money. He got his family together and everything. So he's got about $100,000in an investment in Atlanta. This guy lives in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So, he tells me the story. They invested the money. They did a joint venture agreement with so-and-so, some person. I don't know who it is. And they put the title in this guy's name, the title of the property in this guy's name. And I think normally that would make people feel better that, you know, the property is in your name. Mm-hmm. In this case, it was not better. What happened was they were, you know, moving along with the project and still not finished and still slow. You know, same kind of problems that happen. You know, everybody's got a different sense of timing and when things should be finished. But all of a sudden, something happened, and I don't know how it happened, but a tree fell on the house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and destroyed the house. And, you know, so here you've got the title. Your joint venture partners are handling the project. Do they have the right? Do they have insurance? Did they have insurance? You know, how do you know to check on all of these things? So, you know, these people know they're in trouble, and I think they've got to.
Well, that comes first. It's got to come first.
The insurance.
Yeah, the insurance.
Yeah. So these people know they're in trouble, and the guy's trying to get a hold of them and can't get a hold of their joint venture partners.
Mm.
In the meantime, they're getting code violation orders where it could be like $500 a day and I don't know how many days in jail for each day that this tree has fallen over on this house. And he's in Montana, and this event's in Atlanta.
Right.
And the poor guy, I mean, he says, I'm 35 years old, and this is not all my money, and it's going to take me decades to get out of something like this.
Right. Yeah, that's a tough situation. That is a very tough situation. So there was no insurance?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the status is. I think, you know, he thought there would be insurance, but and the way the people were talking was that they have to wait for the insurance claim to kick in or something. So I don't know, but you know, I hear these stories, and it's heartbreaking, and I, you know, I hope it gets resolved. I did connect him with somebody that I know personally who lives in Atlanta to see if there was something she could do to, you know, just to be feet on the ground.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was
lesson learned here, guys, is whenever you're in a deal, whether you're running the project or whether you're putting money in and you're joint venturing or whatever it is, when the property is closed, not only should you be executing a first trust deed or second trust deed for the investor or the parties, but you should also be requesting that certificate of insurance naming those people as mortgagees or additional insureds. And if you don't know what kind of insurance to get or what to do or where to go, we try to make that very, very easy for you guys as well. Because we only recommend people that we use and trust personally. Okay, we'll never refer you to somebody just because we get some kind of kickback or we have some kind of relationship with them. Everybody that we recommend, because we hold our name and our brand very seriously, are people who we use. So if you guys want to look into that more, you can easily go to c2creia.com/insurance. And we have a little write-up on the company that we use and why. And at the end of that, you can even request a proposal. So, but it's key, and I'm very passionate about that because my previous background is in insurance. I was in the insurance business for over 10 years, and I've seen a lot of things happen. So, and worked with a lot of investors before I got out of the business, and asking them for certificates of insurance and the policies that they're getting are just wrong. And the agents aren't telling them either because they don't know the difference or because they just want to get the sale. And the fact of the matter is, in most cases, if a claim were to happen, those policies wouldn't pay the way that you need them to pay. So it's very critical that you know which insurance policy to get. I have another horror story that's similar in the sense that the investors are looking to lose money. You know, there was a deal that we got into that was remote, and we got the pictures, and we got the comps, and we got everything. We got into the property, and supposedly the project manager says that he gave a draw, and then he gave another draw, and by the looks of things, he never checked that the first draw, the work for the first draw was even done. And next thing you know, there's code violations and different things going on, and about $30,000 is just kind of gone. It's kind of misappropriated. And so what happened here? How do you give somebody a $20,000 draw and then give them another $10,000 and you don't check that the work was done? And so there's a lot of funny business going on there, and these people were managing quite a few projects for us, and we started to see a pattern of similar problems developing over across all of the projects. So we had to step in and stop the bleeding and go a different route. But it's once those things happen and you start ramping up and you're doing multiple deals at once, you know, those risks multiply exponentially with each property. So
Yeah, that is so true. And thanks a lot, Ivan, for, you know, that's one of the benefits that you guys have of this nationwide real estate, whatever, REITs that you're developing. I mean, you've got a central location for, you know, proven vendors like this insurance company. I'm going to look into this for my next one myself. So,
yeah, they have a lot of benefits, Gene. And if you're doing more than one deal, they also offer a portfolio policy, so you don't have to start a new policy each time. You just add a property. Add and delete properties, they offer replacement cost and actual cash value. They offer special form on the contract. They offer full coverage for theft and vandalism, where most policies for vacants, you know, don't include vandalism or have a vandalism exclusion. And what most people don't realize is that vandalism and theft are the two biggest risks when you're rehabbing properties. Whether you're rehabbing to flip them or whether you're rehabbing them to sell as a cash flow property, I think vandalism is and theft are the two biggest things. I've been vandalized several times. I've had air conditioning units stolen. I've had refrigerators and appliances stolen. I mean, it's crazy what happens.
It is. In fact, I think in Bakersfield, there was not, when I was rehabbing in Bakersfield, there was not one stove that didn't get stolen. In fact, one got, yeah, I mean, it was one, I sold one house, they didn't like the oven, so I put a new oven in there, put the old oven in another house, and then that old oven got stolen. Yeah, but I mean, luckily my insurance covered for vandalism. You know, my issue had always been like my $500 deductible or $1,000 deductible or whatever it was. I mean, like an oven, you know, it's hard to, you know, but it's hard to do it, file a claim for an oven, but, you know, when you've got five projects and five ovens going, that's a little tough, but
sure.
Yeah, thanks. I'm really glad that you pointed that out to me. I'm going to look into that insurance, definitely.
Great.
So, I mean, I was looking at your site, the c2creia.com, and
mm-hmm.
you've got a lot of cities that have groups. Tell me, what do you guys,
we have a presence currently in 16 states, and we have essentially 35 clubs. So some of them are virtual, some of them are live. The way that we started was to not only help people, but we always want to practice what we preach. So we're telling people, you know, get out there and network, get out there and network, get out there and network, grow your network. Your net worth is equally proportionate to your network. So it's we're like, well, let's start a RIA here in Southern California just for ourselves, because we know that the more we're connected, the more people that we're in contact with, the more opportunities will come. And so we started one here in Southern California, then we decided to do a triangle. We're like, okay, so what if we go, you know, 30 minutes this way and 30 minutes this way, and then we can draw people from these other areas that might not come to just this one club. And then we started branching further up north, and we started telling people our vision. And the vision was, well, we're rehabbing remotely in most cases, because when I started out, I was rehabbing properties in San Diego County, and that's 3 hours away from where I live. So, to me, I felt like, well, if I'm doing it 3 hours away and I'm never going to see the properties, hardly, why not doing it? Yeah, why not doing it in a different state? You know, so we started doing that. And a lot of the feedback that we were getting were from people that, you know, we're not getting deals done in our area. We can't get an offer done. And what's the people's biggest fear of rehabbing remotely is that, well, we don't know the people, we don't know the area, how do we know what's going on? Well, then our mission basically became connecting people face-to-face from coast to coast, so that you give those people the comfort level of knowing, okay, here's somebody plugged into the same organization as you are, and you can see all the different states that there's people in, and you can reach out to them and say, hey, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such a place. I'd like to talk more about your market. What are you doing in your market? You know, what are the opportunities? Can we join venture? You know, can I go out there and you take me around? Whatever it is, and then essentially increasing that comfort level of being able to invest remotely that way. And that vision, took off, and more and more people wanted to get involved, and they wanted to run one of their own coast-to-coast RIA clubs in their area. And there are different ways that we can help people start a club and set up a club and run it. But it became something that was very good. And we're not the type that just puts some new person in front of you every month and tries to sell you something. We're really more about networking, education. And sometimes that's not the most profitable thing for a RIA club to do. You know, it's definitely more profitable to get people in front of you to try to sell you stuff, but that's not really, that wasn't the model that we want to follow.
No.
And certainly,
and I agree.
And there has to be education, there has to be things, and so we can give as much for free as we can, just like you do. And there comes a point where there's an more advanced level of help and education that requires so much time and energy and effort that there does have to be a little pain of cost associated with making it make sense for everybody. You know, we can't just give all our time for free to people, as you well know. And,
right.
and a lot of times people don't have a little bit of pain, even if they go through the education, they're not going to apply it and they're not going to take it seriously. So, but none of us charge the $30,000 like the gurus do. You know, we want to help everybody from the people that have no money to the people that have a little bit of money. And even if you have $30,000, we're not going to charge you that for anything that we're doing. So that's kind of the genesis of how everything took off. And, well,
yeah, I really like that you've got this portal because, like, you know, here I've got, you've got a Chicago group, and I go to Chicago a lot. I do a lot of my rehabbing in Chicago, and how nice it would be just to go, you know, and connect with some of your investors and just say, hey, you know, who really has a good contractor? Because that seems to be a problem, is getting a good contractor in Chicago. I mean, each area has had their own issues. Of course, getting a good contractor can be, you know, that's like I say, you could either have a really great one or an awful one, and, you know, it really hurt your business. But, you know, you know, really, whoever you deal with, as many references, personal references that you can get from like-minded people, investors, the better off you are.
Yep.
All right, I'll get them. I'll mute them.
Yeah. Okay. And the problem really, like, again, just to kind of ferret out the issue is that you never know if a contractor is good or not until you go through the process. And you also never know when a good contractor that's been good for a period of time, that has connections, that has relationships, that has all these things going for them, all of a sudden they can turn bad too.
I've seen
it's happened. It's happened to me, and it's hurt me a lot. So all of a sudden, here's this guy that's got all this connections with the city and reputation and all these different things, and he's doing projects, and all of a sudden he just goes sideways, and he's running eight of your projects, and
I hear you. I know
things can become a challenge. So. But you have to go through it. You have to. That's, you can't let that fear paralyze you. You'll never get off home base. So you just go through it. And if you start noticing red flags, you correct course along the way. And hopefully you control the damage as much as possible.
Yeah, I hear you. So, yeah, I've been there. Sometimes they will take on too much. And who knows, maybe they've got problems at home. You know, you don't, you know, it's just like you and me. I mean, we have things happen, you know, that happen to us, and it you know, business may take a back seat for whatever reason. Contractors, but I'm going to tell you, after this week, I have determined that all contractors are type B personalities. This last one, I said, so you're going to be finished on Tuesday for sure, right? Oh, yes, ma'am, Tuesday for sure. You know, I think for that, you know, I think what he means by Tuesday is someday. Well, then, for sure, plenty of time. You know, I think I finally will get his final invoice today. And closing is delayed. So, I mean, these things happen, and, you know, you just have to know that going into it. But, you know, next week I'm going to have a check in my hands, and I'm going to be really happy.
Yeah. So. Oh, one thing that I've learned and one piece of advice I would give is any time you go to work with a new contractor is give him one project and see how he does with that one. You know, one mistake that I've made is giving, you know, one guy, even though he had, you know, big crews and everything, giving him too much, trusting too much.
Yeah.
And that's something that they kind of have a propensity to do sometimes is they just get greedy and they're like, yeah, I can handle more. And then they take on more and then you run into one problem, and because they're stretched kind of thin, that one problem derails everything. And so I would say start them off with one project and see how they do before you start throwing more stuff on their plate.
Yep, and I've done that and, you know, gone to more, and that's, you know, like you said, the domino effect happens. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway.
I think this is kind of a fair straight call, isn't it, Gene?
What's that?
I think we're doing kind of a scared straight call.
It's a scared straight call. That's what this is, and that's what I do. I mean, you know, I don't mind sharing the problems that I've had, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. You know, I'm not... You know, and this is not something where you can, you know, you should never feel bad if you don't want to continue in this business. And I'm not encouraging that people leave. I just think that whatever you were taught, if you were like me, you were probably told to expect life to be a certain way, and you're finding that it's not, but yet you can still taste and feel what the results can be. You know it's there. It's not just that somebody lied to you. It's just harder than you had thought going into it. And, you know, you're going to have these kinds of problems. And I'll tell you, Ivan, one of the things that I'm finding in this is that you can have whatever role you want in this real estate game, you know, whatever role you want to have. I mean, yeah, you might have to, you know, go outside of your comfort zone a little bit, and that's okay. But you know what? If that's not where your best talent lies, there's another place for you. For example, I love doing the research. I will do the research, and I will pinpoint a city. I will pinpoint a neighborhood that I like and look into further. And I can feel very confident that I'm making a wise decision based on the data, whereas some people cannot stand the thought of sitting in front of a computer and doing that. Would rather go there, knock on doors, ask the neighbors what's going on. And I would rather pull my toenails out than knock on some stranger's door. So, you know, there's a role for you no matter what your personality type is, and it's just finding it with other people that are complementary. And that's why networking is also so critically important. I go to my weekly networking meeting here, and it's just a group of investors, different strategies that they like, and they just share their stories and just do a roundtable sharing. And, I learn so much just by those meetings. So I really encourage everybody to, you know, start looking in meetings. And if Ivan's got a meeting group near you, to consider joining that. His website is c2creia.com. And
anyway. So number two.
Okay. Number two, creia.com. Yeah, and, I want to invite anybody, if they've got something they want to ask or a situation you want to present and talk about.
Absolutely.
If I muted you, it was because there was background noise or something, and a star six will unmute you. Otherwise, most of you, this is not a really large call, so I don't have to put it in Q&A mode. You can just start talking if anybody's got a question.
And one thing I will add, Gene, before we get started is change strategies too. You know, you said before that if you feel like you got knocked out, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, don't feel bad if you decide this isn't for you. But what I will say is maybe rehabbing isn't for you, but a different real estate strategy is. And there are many out there, and there are ones that I pursue as well. You know, once my plate was full, and especially once I started having some problems and I needed to focus, I stopped acquisitions, but I still was focusing on another strategy, because you got to keep that pipeline going. You got to keep deals coming in regardless of where they're coming in from. Otherwise, you'll just run out of money, and you'll get more stressed out, and you won't make it. So that's, look at other strategies, look at cash flow, look at contract for deed. Look at other things that maybe are less of a risk and are little or no money strategies to complement the other things that you're doing.
I agree 100%. In fact, I came back from my education in California and was frustrated. I couldn't do the same thing here in Austin. So I learned other strategies. I learned the strategies that they were implementing here in Austin, and a lot of it, you know, was dealing directly with distressed sellers, and, you know, I just don't like that. So that's kind of what got me into the rehabbing remotely is, you know, I need to go someplace where I have a business-to-business relationship. I'm dealing with the banks. I'm not going to deal with the person behind the door. You know, and other people are perfectly fine at that, and that's wonderful. And if a wholesaler brings me a deal and I don't have to deal with the distressed sellers, then they are worth whatever I pay them.
Yes, I agree. It's about leveraging your time and your efforts, and those people who help you leverage your time and your efforts should be compensated. And really, every person along the way should be compensated. Some people get upset because the project manager makes so much money and the realtor makes so much money, and you know, all these people make, you know, such and such amounts of money, And instead of looking at it as, well, I'm losing that money because it's going somewhere else, no. I mean, you need them, and their time and their skills are valuable to you. So as long as you're comfortable with your numbers and what you're going to get, then what do you care about what other people make? Everybody should make money, and everybody should be well taken care of. And so just don't have that scarcity mentality of, well, these people are making this much money, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, just be comfortable with your own numbers and happy with what you're getting, and happy that other people are getting theirs too, because that's what's going to keep them happy and continue working with you.
Definitely. I don't count my money. If you're happy with the deal, let's move forward, and it's a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
So does anybody have anything they'd like to offer? Be part of the conversation. I'd welcome you, and, you know, if you prefer that I just put it in Q&A mode, I can do that, but if not, then, what do we got going on? What's coming up? I've been doing the weekly calls. I still haven't decided. I want some feedback. I might want to do like an abbreviated Chicago field trip, be having a remotely field trip. I'm thinking about doing that before the year's end. So I want some feedback from you guys on the call if you would like to see me squeeze in another one in Chicago. The spreads are really good there, but there's some big gotchas, and that's why I think a field trip is definitely going to help a lot of people. So I'd like your feedback, and you can just email me, jean@jeannorton.com, or either, you know, just reach out to me anyway and let me know if you want one. It would probably be after Thanksgiving, but not too close to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivan, you got a couple of things coming up.
Yeah, well, I would encourage all of you, if you're anywhere near Southern California, the REI Expo is coming up the first weekend in November, November 2nd and 3rd. That's Tim Herridge's event, he started off in Texas, and we travel around with him. We were in Chicago and Baltimore, and now he's doing it in Southern California for the first time, and it's one of the better networking events that you can go to, because there are hundreds of investors there. There are many vendors, and you have over 30 classes over the course of 2 days that are essentially for free. And the difference, if you don't know about the REI Expo, their little niche is that there's no selling from the front of the stage. So it's not a pitch fest. The classes all have to be content and educational. And because of our relationship with Tim, I have tickets right now for $100, the going rate. So you can go to this awesome 2-day event for $49 and get yourself out of the house. And it's definitely worth coming. So if you guys are interested in that, let me know, and I can hook you guys up, because right now they're going $150, but I have probably another 40 tickets left for $49 to go to that event. November 10th through the 13th is the American Association of Private Lenders Conference in Las Vegas, and you guys can check that out as well. It's all lenders. So if you want to network with people that have money, that are lending money, that are coming with creative finance strategies, that's another one that you guys are gonna should want to go to. Eddie Speed's making an appearance on the 13th, the end of the day, all talking about notes. So it's going to be an awesome event. And again, I'll direct you to our website. For the $49 tickets, it's cdcrea.com/50off. And for the AAPL Expo, it's just cdcrea.com/AAPL Expo. You guys can get more information there. We have assisted living facilities training coming up in December. I think it's 16th, 13th through the 15th. So maybe there's just always stuff going on.
Well, you're busy. I don't know how you do this. I mean, you're on the radio 5 days a week. Just doing that. That's amazing. And then you're going to these expos. I mean, at some point you're going to drop.
we hope not, but we have to know how to appropriate our time.
Yeah, wow. So you are something else. Well, what time now, when can people listen to you on the radio or online?
We're Bloomberg Radio. Have the notes. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. man, let me check. You put me on the spot here. We just changed over to Bloomberg. We were on P103.3 and iHeartRadio, but now it's
Bloomberg.
Let's see. Yeah. So Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's on KFSD AM 1450. And Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., KSPA AM 1510. And the structure is every Wednesday we do a long, kind of like a long-form interview. So we have one expert in whatever field, and we interview them for an hour, basically. So we get a lot of content during that call. And every other day, we're still bringing in and interviewing other people. From local people to help people with their local strategies and also nationwide strategies as well. And of course, if you go to cdcuria.com/radio show, you can catch podcasts of the radio show if you can't listen to it live.
Oh, great. Well, I know you've got me coming up on one of them. I think that, I don't know which one, but you've got me coming up on one of them.
Yeah. Well, we did one with you already, but we're gonna have you as a semi-regular. Absolutely.
Oh, awesome! Well, that's great. I'm excited. So, I hear people trying to press their buttons. I don't know if they're trying to talk or not, but just go ahead and try to talk and see if you know we can get your question in. If not,
hey.
I think we. Hello.
Hey, Gene. Hey, Janine. Hey, Ivan. How are you doing? It's Janine Florham.
Hello.
Hey, Ivan, regarding that, I'd love to go to that November event. I know I can't go because I'm not going to be able to go to California until I think it's December.
Okay.
But it would be great to know. I've worked with Eddie Speed. He's real good. That's good that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ivan, I have a question for you.
Sure.
What do you think about that new Dodd-Frank mortgage law that's coming in on seller financing that's going to be effective January 10th?
Well, I networked with I was in Kansas City last month at the Thought Leadership Conference, and I met with a guy who manages a $400 million fund there, and one of the things that – well, let me back up a little bit. One of the things that I'm focusing on pretty heavily right now is contract for deed, rent to own, owner financing type of strategy. So what we've been saying for a while is that cash flow is really the future, whether it's through assisted living facilities or whether it's through single families. I believe that's the future more so than what we've all known to be fixing flips. So we're working towards creating awareness towards those strategies and how do you get into them. And we're finding that a lot of lenders are going that direction as well. There's actually going to be a new lending program revealed at the REI Expo geared specifically towards cash flow. And what this fund manager was telling me is that coming in January, they are releasing a lending program that is designed specifically for value-added owner financing. So what they will do is they'll lend on the acquisition and basically just a small rehab, you know, maybe upgrade the kitchen, paint, that sort of thing, nothing major. But then they will hold the note on the buyer that we source, and of course we get paid by the buyers. So we source the buyer, they bring in their payment, we get our cut, and then we essentially just turn everything over to the fund to get the monthly payments. So if you have big people with big money pursuing those strategies themselves, then you should probably pay attention and see how you can get involved with that. And it blew me away because we've been doing this, and now it looks like big people are also following along and are going to hopefully make it easier for all of us. And right now,
I was curious because I know that I don't know if you want to take a moment and explain the Dodd-Frank Act to any listener who doesn't understand what's coming up, just to give you an outline. I wanted to understand what you're feeling through with the limitations on that because, you know, there's going to be a lot. Obviously, you know, the government's going to want to, you know, mandate private lending because the banks aren't loaning, you know, hard money lenders are already regulated. Now they're wanting to step their feet into, you know, the private money industry. And I wanted to hear what your thoughts were on that because we have, Sue and I have our own strategies on how to get around that as well. And we are very familiar with the industry and some people, is, not so much in the note industry as much as private money lending. The note industry is a whole different ballgame. But
yeah.
we do have a person that we met through the note business that that does lending. They are regulated. They regulate their funds through the SEC, but they have, you know, they pool their funds, and everything is done very legitimately, and they get several investors to go in on deals. And yeah, is there a possibility that you could fund owner finance deals like that? Yeah, but I think what I'm really looking for is an answer to what your feelings or thoughts are about the limitation of 3 houses per year, and how do you think investors that are capitalizing on the owner financing is going to benefit or lose out or strategize on that law that's going to be effective on January 10th? And so if you'd like to talk about that.
Well,
that's
I can.
Great to hear.
Yeah, and I can tell you that I am not an expert on that act, and so I really can't speak to it as far as the detail that you want me to go into it.
Right.
Just because
I
haven't researched it enough.
Yeah, I'd like to also just ask you to kind of keep your ears open if you come across somebody that is an expert on that. I'd love to have them on one of these calls.
Okay.
I mean,
may be something that we need to search out.
Yeah, because there is some, you know, I think it's like 1,500 pages of an act, but you know, I think there's some things we need to worry about, and I think some hard money lenders are affected, and you know, there's a lot in there, and of course, whenever there's a new law that is passed like this, you know, you don't know when you get into trouble until it's too late. So
yeah,
I agree.
When Sue and I we were sent the email recently, and we started looking at it, it was like, my goodness gracious, you know, for private investors who even have LLCs or even private money investors who don't, and they lend money to, you know, flippers and rehabbers, this is going to be a huge a thing, because the limitation of just 3 per year was shocking to me. Considering that, I mean, why would you put a cap on the amount of houses that you could buy and owner finance in a year? And so, you know, but just to give you guys a brief overview of it, just so that you understand why Sue and I are concerned about this, and I think everybody who's investing should be concerned about it, is because basically the bottom line of this act is that if you do more than 3 houses on owner financing a year, the feds are going to regulate you by state that you have to become a loan originator.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to go to the state, you're going to have to take the test, and you're going to have to be a mortgage loan originator. Is that a bad thing? Not really. It's just one more thing that's regulated. Is it? But what it means is that it's really going to bring more money to the state? Not really, because you know, I mean, there's so many caveats, but there are going to be people out there that obviously aren't going to pass the test.
Sure. And this is just referring to people who are lending their own money for and holding owner finance properties themselves.
No, it's for someone who owns a piece of property that's doing an owner finance, and they can't flip it, and so they find somebody that wants to buy it, and so they finance it to the buyer.
Yeah, I want to actually say that this has actually been a slight part of some of my weekly discussions and my networking meeting, and you know, we look at that as investors, and we say, okay, how can, you know, does this mean that that's the case if the property is in its own single trust, and how, you know, how can you structure a deal to not trigger that, you know, that rule? And so
exactly, Jean. And I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Sue. But I guess to cut to the chase, I guess that's kind of, I'm actually on a tech support help chat at the moment, so I'm going to be very brief.
Okay.
But I guess that's kind of why I asked Janine to touch on this topic, because, I mean, we've got some ideas on how to work around this act that's coming up. So, in other words, if we want to help a buyer out and owner finance for them, we've come up with a few techniques to kind of bypass this new law that's coming out. But
yeah,
do you guys have any other ideas on it at all?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
I think it depends on what the scenario is, because the way that we do on the finance right now is we find a seller who has a property that they would be interested in selling, but they can't, or they're having a difficult time, or they want another option because it's taking too long or it's going to cost them too much, and so on and so forth. And then once we find that seller and essentially get that property under a non-exclusive option agreement, and we have, gives us the right to market the property to a list of buyers that we have, or just to market for a new buyer, then we find the buyer, we bring them in, and then we essentially draft up we assign the option agreement over, and we draft up a contract for deed, making it a bona fide purchase from day one, and those are the two parties involved. So we didn't originate anything. The seller isn't necessarily originating more than one or two or three a year, because they just have this one house, and then we do it again with a different seller, and we do it again with a different seller, and so on and so forth. So it really depends on I think how you're attacking it and how you're approaching that, whether or not you're going to really be affected by that act. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry, just to jump in real quick. And Ivan, mm-hmm. I love what you're saying there, and you're talking about the purchase side of it, I think. So purchasing, mm-hmm. I don't believe there's limitations on how many you can buy with seller financing, but if you end up with trying to sell them seller financing just to get somebody into the house, have them build their credit, get the income coming in, and if they back mm-hmm. out, you still have their lease, their option payment, you know, so mm-hmm. so that's a cool thing, you know. But mm-hmm. if we're limited to three a year, you know, some of the things I've been looking at is, you know, I got three. Janine is my business partner. She's got three. We can put the talk in an LLC. We can get three there. And, you know, other options. But this is where I'm trying to see if anybody's got anything else out there that we have missed. And let's just share and see what we can do to come up with ways to, I shouldn't say bypass the law, but still fall within the lines of the law, the letter of the law, and not get stuck with only three a year.
Jane, one of the things that I want to share with you, which is one of the reasons why I'm bringing this up to both you and Ivan, too, because with what Sue was talking about is that I want to get into just a little bit of depth about why it's really important for everyone to understand this, especially from an investment perspective. But basically, hard money lenders now, as well as banks, of course, and mortgage lenders, et cetera, all fall under the category of the Truth in Lending Act. Okay, mm-hmm. So the reason why this whole entire law was set up is because private money rules these days in all of our financing for our flips. A lot of private money out there, a lot of private money that's hard money, you know, a lot of financing is mostly private money these days because the banks aren't lending. So the federal government found a way and developed these laws that are coming in. And so basically, brief overview, just to give you guys a kind of a brief overview of what it means is that as a buyer, you're providing the seller financing for a property in any 12-month period. And so then what you do is that you own the property, and you're basically securing the financing for the buyer. And so the law is that you have to meet the requirements of financing. So the financing has to have a repayment schedule. And here's the caveat here. It can't result in any kind of negative amortization. So you have to have mm-hmm. a fixed rate or an adjustable rate that is going out five or more years. And the rate adjustments have to be subject to reasonable limits. And one of the things that the law is stating is that if the financing agreement has an, this is read just directly from the law, if the financing agreement has an adjustable rate, you must determine the rate by adding a margin to an index rate. And the index that you must use must be widely available, such as the U.S. Treasury Securities Indices or LIBOR. And so now what the Feds are going to make you do is when you own or finance, you have to have an amortization schedule completely done for no less than a, basically a 30-year mortgage that you're going to finance over the course of time. And it has to be in compliance with the Truth in Lending Act, no different than what hard money lenders have to do since of last year. And, which is why it's making it harder and harder to get hard money loans. It takes longer and longer because they have to go through the underwriting process just like a mortgage lender does. And a lot of people don't understand, well, I can't understand why you can't, you know, give me money in 10 days. Well, the reason why is because they have they're following the rules of the Graham-Levy-Leach Act, which is no different than what the Graham this law that's been presented now. And I think you know, we're all in this together. We all have similar activities going on, Eugene and Sue and I. And I think one of the things that would be a great topic to come up with in the future, and then regarding the Dodd-Frank mortgage law, is to talk about this Private Lending Act that's going to be coming up in January. I think there needs to be a think tank that needs to come up together. I think something that I think we all need to put our heads together to, you know, to find ways, because, you know, law is black and white, which equals gray. And there's lots of gray areas you can work with, but you better know the law before you step out into gray areas. And you, because you can work within gray areas all day long as you know what the law is.
Sure.
And so this
you know what, I'm gonna ask Jillian Stodi as well. She's one of our real estate attorneys, and we have her we've had her on the radio show already, and I'm definitely gonna ask her, and if it's something that she can that she's familiar with and that she can speak to, then we'll have her do an hour just on that, if it's something that she can do. And if it's not, then we'll find somebody who can and definitely do that.
That's a great idea. The other thing you've got is the AAPL, the American Association of Private Lenders, coming November 10th. Is it the 10th through 14th?
Through the 13th. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, 10th through 13th. And you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar this is going to be the
yep.
There.
Oh, you yep. know it. It's becoming a topic for a lot of people who haven't been paying attention. And it's not that I haven't been paying attention. I didn't realize there was a new law that was going to be coming into effect because I've been so busy with, you know, work and everything and working in the industry. And it's just sometimes things just bypass you. It goes like one day you just get slapped upside the head and it's like, oh, my goodness gracious. This is huge. This is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
okay,
yeah,
thanks for asking for it. I think you're right. We should put it on our radar, especially, you know, whether you lend or you borrow, you need to understand both sides. Just, you know, when you know, that's why you can't ever stop learning in this business, so you can understand. You know, I'm trying to understand what in the heck motivates contractors because I haven't figured it out yet. But, you know. But, you know, I'm working on it. I'll find it eventually. But, you know, if I'm getting a private lender, you know, I need to understand really what he has to go through also.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a good topic, and I'll definitely, you know, look for that. And Ivan, I think it's great, too, that you have that on your radio show as well. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. We'll definitely make that happen.
So if there's any other questions, either speak up. If you can't speak, I might have muted you because of background noise and a star six. Well, you can unmute yourself and just start talking. You know, otherwise, we have been on for an hour, and I think we did a good job of telling some horror stories and getting straight stories.
and honestly, I am going to have to make myself scarce here. You know, so
okay.
If there's anything that we can address in the next minute or so, I'd be happy to, but I do have to get off the phone here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ivan, I really appreciate you coming on. It was a last minute idea. I saw you online and I said, maybe Ivan can make this call And I am so glad you did. I was hoping to have an insurance person on, but we did talk about insurance, so that, you know, kind of covered that too. And anyway, thanks again, Ivan. And I
thank you so much for having me on. I'd be glad to do it again in the future too.
Okay. Well, everybody, and remember, you can hear this and other recordings at rehabbingremotely.com. So good day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You too. Thanks so much, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.